Offside presents a World Cup group preview with Andrew Gunling and JJ Devano.
Oh, yes! Caught offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney. And it's Group G. What's up, brother?
Hey, man. How are you?
Very excited. This is our second to last group preview.
Which is crazy. It's just flown by.
And this, I find to be one of the more interesting groups. Partially because England are in it.
And also because Belgium are in it.
Correct. And because the team that kept the United States from being in it are in it, in Panama.
I don't know if kept is the right word, but okay.
Well, their win was essentially what... Well, and Honduras to go with that. But
yeah.
Nevertheless, let's get right to it, because there's a lot to get to here in Group G. Let's do it alphabetically. How does that work for you?
That works
fine for me. I've kind of done that sometimes. Other times it's just been a total random. Sometimes it's been like... subliminally in the order in which I thought the group was going to go.
But you can be guaranteed that we talk about all the teams, which is all that really matters.
Well, yes. By the way, the other team that we didn't mention yet is Tunisia, so we will get to them as well. But we start, as we always do, with the song, and there's a bit of a song controversy in this group.
A song controversy.
All right, but we'll get to that when we get to it. But it does involve this song, which is number one on Belgium's chart.
One kiss is all it takes, falling in love with me, possibility.
This is called One Kiss by Calvin Harris and Dua Lipa,
who I saw in Kiev. She played before the Champions League final.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I'm sure that whole scene is just, like, to know you at all is to know just how, like, disgusted you probably were. Not because she's bad, but just because, like, you've never believed that is the time or place for anything like that to be occurring.
None of it. None of it.
Right.
And also that she's bad.
Oh, okay.
Well, you know,
also that.
I mean, it doesn't get up there with U2 and Interpol in terms of great gigs I've been to.
Fair enough. Let's talk about Belgium. I'm going to use those words. Let's get it right out of the way early here. For anybody who, if you have like your Belgium drinking game, I'll use the words now. Golden generation. So there, take a shot or whatever it is that you're going to be doing every time you hear that phrase. But I want to talk about that specifically for a second here, because I felt like that term was used a lot leading into the 2014 World Cup. And I'm starting to wonder if maybe we were a little premature in having used it then, but look at it now. And I'm going to run through some of the ages of players on this team. Eden Hazard's 27, Dries Mertens is 31, Lukaku's 25, De Bruyne's 26, Vertonghen's 31, Kompany's 32, Alderweireld's 29, Moussa Dembele's 30. Every single one of their key players, essentially, are all in the thick of their prime now.
You're saying the time is now.
Yes. Now, yes and no. No in the sense that it's not now or never. A lot of these guys, like I said, De Bruyne being 26, Hazard 27, these guys do have, Lukaku's 25. There's another set of major, another European championship for this group, maybe another World Cup for the majority of this group. So I won't say it's now or never, but now is part of it.
It kind of feels like Portugal at Euro 2004. Where you're like, if they don't do this now, when are they going to? Because, I'm sorry, it's father time, really. You look at ages, and I know guys can play deep into their 30s now if they look after themselves, I get it. But you just look at the whole ripening process of this team, and you feel as if not now, when?
Right. I mean, like, to think 4 years ago when we were saying it's now or never for Belgium, this is it. You know, Lukaku was 21. what were people thinking? They were so young at that point.
He was but a boy.
He really was. So let's look at it now. They're key players for this Belgian side. For me, and I have a feeling for you, De Bruyne, that was what I went with.
Yeah, De Bruyne, I had a hard time, though, because if you look at that front three, beyond De Bruyne, Hazard, Mertens, and Lukaku. Yeah. That kind of tip to the arrow of this Belgian team is just so important. But nothing happens back the field or nothing ticks without De Bruyne and the role he's been given. So probably what's going to happen is Witsel is going to sit and De Bruyne is going to be in a kind of, I wouldn't say a free role, that's not quite correct, but he will be in the creative role. And it's... he is so important and vital to the tempo, to the way the moves and the attacks are generated. You can't pick anyone else.
He did something really interesting back in November when Belgium played Mexico in a friendly, and it ended 3-3. And De Bruyne said this afterwards. He said, quote, Mexico were tactically just better than us. They pushed our wingbacks back, and we were swimming in the midfield. It was always 7-5. Took a shot at Roberto Martinez's tactics after that game.
Right.
And we'll see. I mean, a lot of time has passed from November to now, but it was kind of De Bruyne's way, I feel like, of letting the manager know, like, get this right. Don't blow this opportunity for us.
And as, I suppose, irresistible as they were in qualifying, don't forget that last game away to Bosnia sticks in the memory a little bit, the 4-3. That would have rang alarm bells for me. Here's the thing. Roberto
on the road, though, I mean, the fact, right, that was away from Belgium, wasn't it?
Yeah, but Roberto Martinez favours three at the back. And I'm a three at the back skeptic for a lot of teams. But really what Martinez's tactic towards Belgium is, how can I shoehorn in all these great players at once? That's pretty much it. How can I make sure every one of these players plays? And does that sacrifice a more rigid system? Yeah. Now, does it mean they're going to be pretty awesome to watch on the counter-attack during attacks? Yes. But I worry a little bit.
What needs to happen for them to go on a run?
Not much. Not much. I think they should be tied up in the group before they meet England. I mean, that final game, England versus Belgium, could be a nothing game.
Well, yes and no.
It could be for number one spot.
Which is really important.
That is something, actually, yeah.
Most likely, whoever wins this group will probably get Senegal in the next round as opposed to Colombia.
Colombia, which they won't want.
But then beyond that, because I would say in terms of what your potential round of 16 matchups, as far as that goes, Colombia or Senegal, that's not bad. Like, you feel England, Belgium, whoever you think is going to win this group, no matter what, if that's your next round matchup, you kind of feel like we got a real shot to win.
Yeah,
this
and that's
one.
Not being disrespectful, but...
But beyond that, I believe Germany would then be the quarterfinal matchup for whoever comes in second.
Seems like a fair...
So if you want to look further down the line, that's kind of what's at stake.
But we feel that this team is talented enough to be talking about that scenario.
Of course.
So, like I said, the other two teams which we'll get to in the group outside of England and Belgium have their own kind of unique ways of playing, which could frustrate, mm-hmm. but you can't feel that they'll hold a Belgian team like this back very much.
I mean, I'm sort of looking at Lukaku, who was so good, 11 goals during qualifying for Belgium. Belgium, as a team, by the way, scored 43 during UEFA qualifying. That was tied for the most with Germany. I don't know, something about the idea of De Bruyne linking up with Lukaku, plus we'll get to, I'm sure we'll talk about before we get out of this, the defensive unit that they have in the back. It feels like there's a really impressive spine for this team.
Yeah, I'm looking at the team that played in the last friendly for them with Alderweireld, Simon, and Vertonghen as the back three. Company's fitness is going to be interesting. Where is he at? Do you plug Vermaelen in if he can't start?
Well, this is my undoing. We can go right into that now. My undoing for them is health, and it's not really a fair one because that's really the undoing for every team. But for them, it feels a little more real because of this. Now, like you say, they're probably going to play three in the back, and if all things are equal, I know you said it was Simon, but I would think Martinez would want to go Company, Vertonghen, and Alderweireld. If he does that...
I believe that is his preferred choice.
And if he does that, here's what he's looking at. Muscle injuries this season for Company and Alderweireld limited them all season long. Both players appeared in less than half of their club's matches. And yes, like you said, they do have Laurens Simon, and they have Thomas Vermaelen on the bench as well, which looks like a huge bonus. But Vermaelen had a muscle injury this season. He appeared in just 14 league games for Barcelona and just one Champions League game. Part of that was because of the injury. Part of that is just because he was unable to unseat the guys there who were ahead of him. So on paper, they've got what appears to be five guys who can all play that position to a pretty high level. But how many of them are going to be fully healthy headed into this tournament?
That's
important.
It's huge. And when you talk about fitness... You talk about muscle injuries, and you talk about a back three where there are gaps for wily centre forwards to run into and bring your three centre backs out into the channels. That's huge. You need everybody at peak fitness. And that, to me, could be where this thing falls apart a little bit.
With the defensive formation?
The formation, the fitness of it, the structure of it. Witzel becomes huge because he's going to do a lot of screening work.
Yeah,
he's
and he apparently is going to start ahead of Moussa Dembélé.
But that's obvious why, though. Because he won't want, in this formation, two attack-minded players like Dembélé and De Bruyne, who can't do the kind of things that Witzel will be able to do for them.
My X factor for this is kind of exactly what you're saying. I put the wingbacks for Belgium because they've got Yannick Carrasco, who's going to be on the left, I believe, who's playing now in China. He's always been more of an attack-minded guy. I mean, is he going to remember to, like, is it in him instinctually to remember to be getting back defensively, that's
where Witzel comes in? He's going to have to slide left and right and try and cover those gaps as well, because Carrasco doesn't seem to me to be a natural defender.
And then on the other side, it's Thomas Meunier, who's not, I mean, he's, I like him, but he's not a regular first teamer for PSG. Started 16 games this season for them, 8 substitute appearances, just 1 substitute appearance in the Champions League. So I don't know. I look at the rest of the squad and I feel like it's airtight. I mean, like, from keeper, midfield, attack, everything, even the central defense, when healthy, is all fantastic. To me, wingback is really the only thing that I feel like could go either way.
One of my undoings was the manager himself. And I don't mean to be disrespectful.
We've
but
been very hard on him.
We've been very
speaking.
Hard on Belgian managers going right back for the history of this podcast.
Wilmots.
Mark Wilmots got a lot of abuse from us. And why? Because we felt, to whom much is given, much is expected. And he had the golden generation of Belgian players. Now we have the
right, but we're just saying now that maybe it was too soon to anoint them.
Right. But I never felt he knew entirely what he was doing with them. And I'm not sure that outside of how can I get as many of these amazing players onto the field as possible, that Roberto Martinez does. And we know before he has a penchant for attacking football, going the other way. Maybe he's not tactically as astute. So I'm just concerned. This is a tournament. I'm trying to get my head around the idea of Roberto Martinez in a tournament situation, which we've never seen as a manager. Being able to make decisions on the fly, game to game. I just have concerns. And I don't want to be disrespectful, but that's what's happening.
But look, managers, they're a fair game to be criticized. So, hey, have at it. Really let in on them. Anything else on Belgium for you?
X-factor-wise, I went with Eden Hazard, actually.
Oh, okay.
Hand in 11 goals, 6 scored and 5 assists in qualifying.
Yeah.
He makes everything tick up front as well. And as important as De Bruyne is behind him, I think, especially given the nature of some of the opponents they're going to have, if he has an off day against the Panama, gets kicked around the place, Belgium could be in for maybe a 1-0 scrape or a 0-0 kind of game. That said, if he does what he's capable of doing, starts zipping the ball around, moving their defenders all over the place, England, Panama, Tunisia are in for a long, long game.
He's just happy the US didn't qualify after Yedlin owned him 4 years ago.
The ownage was strong in that game. Hey, listen, and he is a guy that can occasionally fade.
Well, he had a weird season at Chelsea. And he perked up at the end of the year, and he was really good in the FA Cup final.
When he turns up, it's quite something.
Yeah.
And again,
when he turns up, he's arguably, I mean, like, you can talk about him and De Bruyne and Kane and now Salah, like, they're all in the same category, but it's just a matter of how consistently he does that.
But there's something very interesting about him that I love. He is so strong. His low center of gravity is amazing. Like, when he's up for it, you can tell, because he's riding tackles, he's just moving past people, his ability to dribble, to find the pass. I'm excited about him in this tournament, I'm not going to lie.
There's another Hazard in this tournament.
Thorgan.
That's right, of Borussia Mönchengladbach. This could be a potential coming out party for him as well.
Where will we rank the Hazards versus the brothers, the Charlton brothers, the Neville brothers?
The Torres. I think until we really see something from Thorgan, they can't really be ahead of some of those other ones, right?
No, they can't be. Because look at all the Neville's won. Look at what the Charlton's won, a World Cup.
Yeah.
Just interesting.
No, you're right. That's a big underlying storyline for this World Cup.
Thorgan Hazard.
We move on now from Belgium, and here we go. This is the big song controversy, because for the first time, we have a repeat. And not only is it a repeat song, JJ, they happen to be back to back.
One kiss is all it takes. Falling in love with me. Possibilities.
Number one in both Belgium and England is this song. So there you go. It's a little bit disappointing.
You can look at it one of two ways. The first way you can look at it is the general collapse of the music industry to the point where everything's just the same.
Yeah.
Or you can look at it as that the Belgians and the English have great taste.
Maybe. I would say that in terms of music, the world has gotten a lot smaller.
Hasn't it?
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of reasons for that. Isn't streaming, really.
Definitely. Oh, yeah, the internet has just... It's worked wonders in tightening up this planet that we inhabit. Do you remember 4 years ago what England's number one was? Oh. I remember the artist, but I can't remember the song.
24? No.
It was Sam Smith.
Oh.
What's his really, like, slow song?
It was the one that made him, like, famous.
Yeah, yeah.
That one, like, what's that show he was on? Britain's Got Talent? No.
I don't know. But like, I remember...
The X Factor Britain.
I remember...
Oh, we got to look this up.
Yeah, I remember that that was kind of my introduction to him. Was 4 years ago when we were doing this. Maybe he had been famous for a long time and he was just off my radar. Well, here, you look it up and let's get into England here. Always one of the most interesting sides at any tournament they're a part of. I'd say them, France, because of various off-field controversies that the French sometimes seem to be involved in. Yeah, these are always the teams that grab headlines. Right now, though, it kind of seems like all quiet on the England front, which is probably a good sign.
Very much so.
Yeah.
The Sterling gun controversy has died down somewhat because it wasn't...
Oh, what controversy?
There was no controversy. It was whatever the Sun were feeling at that moment in time. I'm skipping ahead here, but...
Yeah, go for it.
My X factor for them is kind of the relaxed nature of things. So they had a media day last week. And it wasn't like the usual media day for England, where the press are out in front, the manager comes out with like two players, and that's it. That's all you're getting, guys, because you don't like us, you're always trying to get to us.
Yeah.
All that kind of animus was broken down, and all the players were made available, as in the Super Bowl, and every journalist went round and seemed to get as much time from whatever players they wanted.
Yeah, and there almost seemed to be like a lighthearted nature to it.
Very much so. They were asking questions about Fortnite.
Right.
What are they going to do about the boredom?
I saw Fabian Delph talking about how Raheem Sterling, I guess, won like a ping pong tournament that
right.
they had. I don't know. We've heard so much of Rio Ferdinand talking about how when they were in their prime, that group.
Yeah, in Baden-Baden.
It was like the Manchester United guys sat with the United guys. The Liverpool guys were over here. It doesn't... I mean, who knows? Now the tournament will transpire and we'll see what pressure does to this group. But as of now, it doesn't... This team seems more together.
They seem to be unified. Now, look, that all changes the minute, you know, you let a goal in against Iceland. That the Iceland equalise, everything changes. So I don't want to read too much into it. But generally speaking, there's always some cloud when you go into a major tournament with England. And by the way, I know they've got big-time players. I know they've got famous worldwide faces. But where's your Beckham? Where's your Rooney? Where's your Gerrard? There's none of these almost iconic figures. Harry Kane would probably... become that.
Right, but he's not like the tabloid figure that you're kind of referring to.
Right, there doesn't seem to be that. They all just seem, in some ways, on an equal par.
I was going to say, dare we use the word likable?
Is this a likable team?
I kind of think it is.
Who don't I like? I don't think there's anyone I don't like.
Yeah, like off the
there's
top
no
of
big
my head.
Ego. You know, like there's no divisive figure like Paul Gascoigne. You know, there just isn't.
Yeah.
Like, how many people said... Oh, you know, Rooney's a talented footballer, but there's something about him I don't
right.
like.
He or was even, always a polarizing
even,
figure.
Even Beckham, like, wasn't always beloved by everyone. So this is a good thing, I think.
I think it is. Let's talk about some of the personnel. For my key player, I'll start with a guy who you just mentioned, and it's Harry Kane, but it's even slightly more than that. I'm kind of lumping Jamie Vardy into this as well. And hear me out for a sec. The form... You know, England have always, they had great midfields with Lampard and Gerrard. But it feels like at striker, they're maybe as strong as they've been in quite some time.
I would agree.
And here's what I mean. Their form coming in, Harry Kane this past season, 37 goals in 44 matches. Jamie Vardy had 20 goals this season. So a combined 57 goals for those two players. Now, I'm not saying Vardy's going to start, but I look at them as kind of the one and two in terms of the striker position for this England team. Contrast that with England's primary strikers heading into their last two World Cups. In 2014, it was Danny Welbeck and Wayne Rooney. Welbeck had 10 goals in 30 appearances coming into that tournament. Rooney had 17 in 38, 27 goals. That's 30 less than what Vardy and Kane combined for this year. In 2010, it was Rooney and it was Emile Heskey on that side. Rooney came in. Rooney actually had a big season. He had 31 goals in 38 appearances. Heskey had 3 goals in 31, you know, 34 combined goals. I mean, between Vardy and Kane, you have two guys who are, they're not just good strikers. These are world-class strikers right now up front for England.
And I think a point to be made is that they give you something different. Like Kane, okay, I know he can run the channels, actually much better than most people realize, but he can hold the ball up, he's good with his back to goal, he brings others into the play, and he's an aerial threat. Vardy can run the channels like an out-and-out sprinter. He creates problems, he can press, he can hassle. You know what he's like. I heard a weird debate the other day. I actually think Vardy's a very good finisher. And they were saying that this debate was, is he as good as X or Y? Vardy is going to give you something different to Kane, and that's vital as well. And we're not even mentioning Raheem Sterling as well. We're going to. Okay.
I'll get to that right now, actually. He was my X factor for this England side. I believe he's nailed on to start for this team. Don't know exactly what his role will be, if he'll be next to Kane, if he'll be behind him slightly, but he's going to be some sort of attack-minded role for him. He seems to be kind of the guy that I feel like past England teams just haven't really had. And now he's entering his prime. He's been around for so long, but he's still what? He's just 23 years old. Here's what Paul Ince said about Raheem Sterling a few days ago. Quote, Raheem is probably our most dangerous player, but he has to be ruthless. This is Ince talking about Sterling's one weakness, and that is his finishing ability. Because I'm telling you now, he might get away with it against Panama or Tunisia, but the further you go into the competition, the more likely it is you'll get one chance. And if it doesn't fall to Harry Kane but falls to Sterling, at Manchester City, Sterling scores a lot of goals, but a lot of them are tap-ins. He scored one worldie, I remember, in the top corner, but a lot were tap-ins, and he's not the ultimate finisher. He gets himself into great positions like we saw against Nigeria last week, but he puts shots over the bar, and he has to be more clinical. So that's why he is my X factor, because he did score a ton of goals this season for Manchester City. But Ince does make a good point. Not all of them were of the highest degree of difficulty.
And if I was to offer you a one-on-one scenario, it's Jamie Vardy one-on-one with the keeper, or it's Raheem Sterling one-on-one with the keeper. Who are you picking?
Vardy.
He's not... I don't think he'll ever be an out-and-out striker in that way, but he... The other side to it is he could go on a run. Like, if there's knockdowns from Kane, if there's scraps in around the box, Sterling could have a very big tournament.
Yeah. I mean, he just brings this, like, dynamic athleticism to this team that I feel like sometimes England doesn't have. So, yeah, when he's good, there's not really another player like him in that group. But, yes, the finishing is always kind of an issue with him. For me, in looking at what needs to happen for them to go on a run, I'm kind of looking at Kyle Walker. Because he's being used in this tournament in a way that he is not used to being used. Gareth Southgate...
We think.
Right. By all accounts, it seems like Gareth Southgate is going to go with a back three. And then...
He'll be to the right of that back
three. And he's going to be part of the back three, essentially kind of usually where you would dispatch one of your center halves, which Walker has never been. And he talked about this and how his role is going to be different. He said, you can't get forward too much. I like to get forward, but it's not a one-man team. I'm 28. I've played enough football to know when to go. I've learned a lot at Manchester City. Could I have played in the position a couple years ago? Probably not. I have to take my hat off to Pep Guardiola for what he's taught me over the last year. It's been an education. So even, I mean, this is new. This is new ground for Kyle Walker, who is a guy that we always on this podcast talk about. He loves getting forward. And what makes him a good defender is he's got such great speed that he's able to recover when a guy gets in behind him and he can catch up and make the play. But now they're not really asking him to get forward in the way that he does for City, which, I don't know, it seems weird to me. That's one of his strengths.
I think if he's committed to the three at the back, though, we talk about the spaces, Andrew. If he gets pulled out of the center, he's got that recovery pace. Do you know what I mean? Like he can, if there's someone running down, he can come out and compete. And that's probably why he favors him there. He's also trying to get other players in wide positions too, who might be even better than Walker in terms of delivering crosses.
Clearly, you're talking. I can see who you're talking about.
Oh, Trippier.
Yeah.
I will die.
He does play in a great ball.
Yeah, I will die on that hill. I think he's a excellent delivery. Yeah, interesting. The thing for me is, if you look at the inexperience of this team, look at the goalkeeper. How many caps is the starting goalkeeper going? They've literally just decided on who will be the starting goalkeeper, and we expect it to be Pickford.
Yeah.
Those things, and I won't say experimental, but largely experimental for an England side to go into a tournament playing with three at the back. Mm-hmm. Experimental, although they did it in 90 somewhat, but anyway.
Doesn't affect these players,
right. And then to have a brand new goalkeeper, who I like and who most of us, I think, rate pretty highly, that could be a potential undoing.
Yeah.
I also look at the midfield. And
me as well.
I like, further up the field, the attacking side of things, the holding centre midfield position, which we expect will either be Henderson or Dyer, most likely Henderson. I don't know.
It's something that worries me too, because when I look at Kane and a lot of the success and goal scoring that he has at Spurs, look, even the most ardent Harry Kane supporter would be foolish not to credit Christian Eriksen with a lot of that. I mean, Eriksen is just so great at linking up play and getting the ball to Kane in the right spots. Who's that guy?
There isn't really anyone like that, is there?
Ali, Henderson, Dyer, Lingard, Loftus-Cheek. I mean, these are guys that are probably going to be in the midfield in some role. Lingard maybe a little further forward. But I don't see a guy who screams creativity in the way that maybe an Eriksen does. Or like what we were just talking about with Belgium, De Bruyne linking up with Lukaku. I don't know who that is on this England team.
No, it seems you're going to have Henderson to set some kind of tempo. Now, when they play Panama, who is going to sit deep, Henderson's going to have a lot of the ball, Andrew. He's literally going to be pivoting and giving the ball again, setting the tempo and the pace. I don't think he's that good at that. We saw that in the Champions League final. I don't think he really gets your team on the front foot. So now you look at, well, what were the other options? There wasn't a ton. Uh-huh. But did Jack Wilshere give you something different?
So who are you leaving off? Loftus-Cheek?
Maybe. I don't know. I wouldn't have criticised Gareth Southgate's selections very much, but I do look at the midfield and I thought, it's just, particularly that deep lying role.
I don't think Wilshere's that great.
I don't think he's not even that. I'm not even sure that he's, I'm not saying that he'd play that deep lying role per se, but if you have a Henderson there that can, basically, your job is to get the ball and give it to your more creative players, and that's your role done, Jack Wilshere kind of could have, he kind of fits that mold for me, but I know injury interrupted season yet again, and maybe Southgate looked at it and thought, I can't be guaranteed this guy isn't going to get a knock. And then where am I? I'm in serious trouble, injury-wise. I just think when you go further back that midfield, things get a little bit more complicated for England in that I don't think they're very good.
That's a fair point. I would agree with that. One other note on England before we leave this. I just saw this morning at ESPN FC.
Oh, boy.
Tony Adams, formerly of Arsenal, he told The Sun.
And England captain.
Yes, he said this about this England team. You must be able to handle winning emotionally and mentally, and if they don't know how to win it, they aren't going to win it. I'm really worried about these Tottenham players. I don't think they know how to win. They're very good players, but at certain points in seasons and tournaments, you have to step up. There's a psyche that players must have. There are five Tottenham players on this side, all of whom look to be vital to this England team. Kane, Ali, Danny Rose, Eric Dyer, and Kieran Trippier.
I think it's a bit unfair to say that and to extrapolate things that have happened at the club level into international football. I think that feels like an unnecessary shot from a former Arsenal legend.
The couple things that I would say about it are, first off, who decides what is and is not a big game? Like, this Tottenham team, you're right, they haven't won a title and they haven't won a cup. But a 3-1 win and a draw on the road against Real Madrid in the Champions League are not big games. Look, I know what happened against Juventus in the return leg, but down 2-0 at Juve in the Champions League and coming back to draw 2-2,
yeah,
that's not experience that matters.
But also specifically, which of these England Spurs players like genuinely let everybody down in those games. It wasn't Harry Kane. Harry Kane's out in Turin scoring a goal, you know? You could say Dele Alli's had a kind of an up and down season a little bit.
That's definitely fair.
Fair. But I think it's wild to stretch club form into by the way, what about maybe Hugo Lloris? The Hugo Lloris, who is a Frenchman, you know, look at the Vertonghen playing. It's just, it doesn't work for me to just say, hey, these guys played on a team that probably underachieved this season. They're probably going to underachieve for England. That just seems like 2 + 2.
Yeah, I don't know. I there's certainly another way to look at it, which is this is a core group that is responsible for one of the greatest eras in Tottenham's history right now. So that's the other side of the coin. And the other thing that I would say to Tony Adams, okay, fine. Let's for a second say that he's got a good point here. Well, then what do we say from those, you know, mid-2000s teams with Gerrard, Lampard, Beckham, Ferdinand, teams that were loaded with
winners.
Yeah, what did they do?
Yeah.
That was so special. So I don't know. I think he's serious.
Saul
didn't see
Campbell
his face.
And Rio Ferdinand at center back, yeah. Right? What had they not won?
Yeah,
still doesn't mean anything.
No. So I don't know. I kind of viewed it as Tony Adams' chance to maybe get a dig in at this being a Spurs heavy side. But I personally don't agree with it.
Give us the Arsenal options, you know?
Wow, you said that, not me.
You know, it sounds like he's just a bit upset that there was probably a time where, you know, for your Kyle Walkers, or excuse me, for your Danny Roses, you could have read, I don't know, Ashley Cole. Like that, it's almost as if the changing of the guard in North London has upset him now, and now he's going to push that into the England sphere. Otherwise, I just don't agree with it. It doesn't work like that. Football doesn't work like that.
Well, and we'll see. I mean, look, in the end, if these guys all bleep the bed, then maybe we'll go back and revisit this. But I think it's a really unfair comment to make at this point.
Like, say when Barcelona were dominating and Spain were winning those things, was Sergio Ramos somehow, well, I can't have him in there. He's not winning domestically. You know, doesn't make sense.
Crazy. All right, we move on now. That's England, and we head to Panama. This was number one on Panama's iTunes chart, and I think this speaks to where this country is at right now. It's not really an artist that you'll have heard of or anything like that. It's actually the number one song is Panama's World Cup song called Sube la Marea. That enthusiasm that they're feeling right now, and God knows they should be feeling it, their first trip to a World Cup, and the way in which they did it is nothing short of incredible. This is a quote from Panama's president, Juan Carlos Varela. He says, "The important thing is that all Panamanians can see the three matches, and hopefully more than three matches, without affecting the economic and social development of the country." They're terrified, JJ.
Nobody's going to go to work.
Right, and President Varela considered making their game days national holidays and shutting down schools and businesses, but he opted not to, and he's instead asked that all these businesses, I believe the term he used was, please be creative in how you ask your employees to work that day.
It's basically meaning we're going to give you the afternoon off for the game, but you've got to come back in and do something.
Yeah, good luck with that. What if they win? And the whole country is drunk.
I have so many stories from Ireland from 2002 when that was the policy.
Leave, but you better be back here.
Please come back.
It's just scary, though, to think that they're actually worried about the economic impact that this could have on an entire country.
You think of a small nation like that, though. Yeah. It's real. It really is.
It's amazing.
But it's great.
It is.
Because it reminds me, again, it reminds me of 1990 and Ireland's first trip. Nothing takes a country over quite like this. It's so special for them. And by the way, that song is ticking a lot of boxes for me in terms of what a World Cup song should be. It's got to be memorable, catchy chorus, something that's easily repeatable.
Very upbeat.
Yeah, upbeat.
When you watch the video online, which is not an easy thing for an American fan to do, it's just littered with highlights of
Roman Torres
and fans bouncing in the stands. Look, we all remember the way that Panama got here with their last day victory against Costa Rica and the phantom goal, which I guess now for Panamanians, it kind of goes down in the same sort of lore that, you know, Maradona's hand of God goal. It goes into that category for a Panamanian fan. Like everyone, if you're a Panamanian fan, you have to embrace it and just say, look, you can't defend what happened. They didn't score, but it was still given to you, and you got to own that moment and just say, look, this happens. It's tough. Deal with it.
It's like Luis Garcia's ghost goal for Liverpool versus Chelsea in 2005. Like Liverpool fans have just embraced the fact that probably wasn't over the line.
Yeah. Oh, God, it still kills me. The key players for this side, I've got a couple here. This Panama team is weird. In that,
and by weird you mean old.
They're so old, and it's kind of my X factor. Also, I'll kind of lump the two together here. The key players that I have are Blas Perez and Luis Tejada, the strikers for this side. Now, I don't know that Luis Tejada is going to score, but him and Perez both have 43 goals for their country, which are tied for the most.
How old is Blas Perez?
37, and Tejada's 36. But that's this team.
Yeah,
it's. Look at this. As my X factor, I have written down experience. But the reason it's an X factor is because they have literally zero World Cup experience. But on the other side of that, they're actually the most experienced team at this tournament. Did you know that this team enters Russia 2018 with the highest number of average caps per player? 62 is the average of the number of international appearances that this side has.
Now, say what you like about the Gold Cup, but these are guys who have a lot of tournament football experience. Now, is a World Cup something different and special? Of course it is. It obviously is. But these guys, I'll tell you, the first time I came across them.
By the way, just not to interrupt you, but the fact that it just shows how far you've come in embracing CONCACAF, that you even just uttered that sentence where you're comparing their Gold Cup experience to what's going to come in the World Cup. But I think it's beautiful.
In the run of a Gold Cup, you will meet once or twice some pretty good teams that will be at a World Cup. That's what I'm saying. The Georgia Dome, 2015, Gold Cup semifinal. Mexico versus Panama. That's the first time I came across them. And they were desperately unlucky to have been beaten in that game. Really, really...
controversial calls.
Huge, Mr. Mark Geiger. But I will say this. Their ability to crush a game, to bring a game down to their terms, and really suffocate the creativity of the opposition... Look, I don't care how old they are. That is something that is ingrained in them. It's embedded in them. And they will make games ugly. And that's to their advantage.
Yeah. And that speaks to ask the question of what needs to happen for them to go on a run. It's kind of their odds of winning this tournament are among the lowest of any side. Maybe the lowest. I'd have to go back and look. Maybe I'll do that while you're talking.
I think they ranked Tunisia as better than Panama.
Okay.
So it's 0.02 or something.
Okay. But so look, it's a relative term. Go on a run. Them getting a point
is a run,
right? Like if they score a goal, they may lose that game 7-1. But whoever scores that goal for Panama in a World Cup, there's going to be a statue made of that guy. So it's a relative term. But for me, I look at their defending because here's the thing: they conceded 10 goals in their 10 hex games, and that was with the 4-0 defeat against the United States and a 3-1 defeat to Costa Rica. They conceded 3 goals in the other 8 games, aside from those two. And that's what they're going to do. And they do have guys that American fans are obviously aware of. Michael Murillo of New York Red Bulls, versatile defender who could be used as a fullback, or if they want to move him into central defense, he can bounce between the two. And, of course, Roman Torres, who we've known for years at the Seattle Sounders, who scored the goal that Panamanian fans will never forget to get them into this tournament. So they do have some players.
Godoy.
Anibal Godoy. There's a lot of MLS talent on this team, a lot of names that American fans are familiar with. So, but I look at their defending because they're going to have to do exactly what you're saying and just grind these games to a halt.
But honestly, no. And let's look at what we just said about Belgium and England. You can see either Belgium or England, maybe not both, but one of them is going to fall foul to these guys. Now, I'm not saying they're going to win it, but I'm saying a dour nil-nil kind of game.
Well, everybody will be pointing to England, Iceland at the European Championships. And Panama is actually the only country in this tournament smaller than Panama in terms of population is Iceland. So it's kind of ironic for England to once again be drawn into a group with a team that's kind of that caliber. So the fact that it's sort of happened to England before is...
I'm not even thinking in those terms. I'm thinking of England-Algeria from the 2010 World Cup where Rooney's frustrated coming off the field. Just a game where England can't get it done, or Belgium. I'm just saying Panama are going to cause problems for one of those teams. I just know it. I feel it.
In terms of Panama's undoing...
You could say age.
Well, yeah, I suppose you could. Also, happy to be there syndrome, where like they've already won their World Cup.
You think so?
Yeah.
I think they're obviously going to spend a lot of time defending, and you just wonder... I looked at Gabby Torres as an X factor. 9 goals, 15 games in the Chilean top division, 15 goals in 72 internationals. It's not a great turnaround. I know Blas Perez is like the god, but do you honestly think there's another tournament in which Blas Perez can get the goals to help them really be contenders in this group? No. No.
Not really.
So.
No. No, I really don't. With Panama, you're maybe a little bit different than I am, because I mean, you live here and you certainly have embraced the U.S., but will you root for... Like, they are the underdog of this whole tournament.
Yeah, I will. I will.
I feel like I've kind of been robbed of that. Like, I feel like in other tournaments, I would have a great time rooting for them, but because them getting here at the U.S. expense, it's just hard. I find it just hard for me to, like, enjoy their time in this tournament.
I know, but...
I'm so bitter and so petty.
No, and I get it. I get it. You're petty. You're upset more than anything, but let me tell you, it shouldn't stop you from shouting for them.
Well, guess what? It will.
They're not a natural enemy.
No, of course not.
I'm not asking you to shout for L3. I'm not.
All right, that's
fair.
And
I kind of feel like they've got that novelty factor. It's their first World Cup. Don't be bitter. Don't be bitter.
All right, you're right. No, you're right. You know what? That's a good point. I'll learn from this conversation, and now I'm going to root.
Chances are they're not coming close to getting out of the group, so...
Who's your prediction for who's going to score their goal?
They're going to get a goal.
Who will score the first Panama goal in World Cup history?
Oh, let me tell you exactly what it'll be. It'll be a corner kick, and it'll be a Roman Torres header.
Wow.
Yeah, because open play is going to be... I'll tell you what will happen. He'll go up for the header, and it won't go in, but it'll fall to him again.
Like kind of like a scramble?
A scramble, and he's going to side foot it home. I can see it. Isn't that the kind of goal you see them scoring?
Definitely, yeah. Yes. It's not going to be like...
intricate 17 passes.
What? I don't think so.
Disrespectful for people.
You know, just as much as me, you need... Look how arrogant you are.
Yeah. None of my countries are going.
So that's Panama. We move on now from them to the final team in this group, alphabetically. That is Tunisia. And they're number one. It was really difficult to find this online. So I found some...
This is serious guesswork.
I found like a Facebook chart where earlier this month, it was like, it had a bunch of Facebook most reviewed or something like that. And it's ALA with the song Used To. So there is that.
Sounds a bit like a... Who would that be?
I don't know.
A Tunisian style, not Drake. Kind of early Drake, maybe.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of somebody else that... what's that guy that I destroyed, the rapper that I said I didn't like, but I really do like now because I've listened to him a little bit. He won some major awards. I don't know how many Grammys. What was his name? Come on.
I have absolutely no idea.
You're supposed to be really...
You said it on this show?
Yeah. And people crushed me. They were like, you've got to listen to him. He's awesome.
Was this a
Kendrick
recent?
Lamar.
Oh, yeah. Well, yes, you were just wrong about that.
Is that Tunisian Kendrick Lamar?
He just won
Lamar?
A Pulitzer, Kendrick Lamar. How about that? Tunisian Kendrick Lamar?
Maybe not.
Let's see. I kind of feel bad for Tunisia coming into this this tournament because they've been... when you're Tunisia and you're at a World Cup, you can't afford anything to go wrong. And the number of key injuries that they've already been hit with... I don't know. I don't want to say that it's kind of like caused their World Cup to unravel before they even got here, but it kind of has. How about this? Before anything happened, this is a few months ago, I think Nabil Malul, who's the manager for Tunisia, he was just talking about the guy on his team who he deems to be his best player. That's Youssef Meskhani. And nothing had happened. Meskhani was playing in the season. And Malul, in just trying to put praise upon him, said, us not having him at this World Cup would be like if Argentina didn't have Messi. And then a little while after that, he tore his ACL. Ugh. And he's out. Came actually to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and had surgery there. There was a picture he posted on Facebook with a cast. And he's every country's got one. Tunisian Messi will not be at this tournament. And I wonder what Nabil Malul would have to say now. So there's that. And that even beyond that, Taha Yassin Kehanisi is going to miss this tournament as well. Striker up front with an injury. They weren't sure. He had a chance of being back, but he's not going to. So he was left off the squad. And then the last one here, a guy who I have as my X factor, is Wahbi Khazri, who a lot of English Premier League fans will know from his time with Sunderland. He is still technically a part of Sunderland, but he was on loan in league this season with Rennes. He's been out with a thigh injury, hasn't played in their tune-up games, hasn't played at all since April, missed the last three games of the season. If he's good to go, he's a key figure for them and might be their most important player, but we just don't know.
But it's a hamstring, isn't it?
I thought I'd read a thigh injury.
Well, I think it is the hamstring. That's what I read. Okay. I think I read that in the dailymail.com. I think he's going to be one of those where he plays regardless. Like, they find a way to get him out there.
I mean, that's a dangerous game to play.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, if you take him out of the squad, here's the interesting thing, and we have recent evidence that they can be quite tough to break down. They held Spain in a friendly until the 84th minute when Iago Aspas scored. That's decent. Mm-hmm. What's more interesting is that they reduced Spain to just one shot on target up into the 65th minute of that game. Now, clearly they're going to be set up to spoil in a different, or probably in a similar way actually to Panama. But if they don't have that attacking outlet in Khazri, I don't see what happens to them. I don't see anything happening for them, rather. I think they're done.
They actually had the same number of shots on target as Spain. It was 2-2.
That's crazy.
Possession was 70-30, as you
right.
expect.
But that's how it's going to be in the tournament for them.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I mean, in terms of a key player, their most important player is now probably going to be Mohamed Amin Ben Amor, midfielder who plays professionally in Saudi Arabia. Very creative player, but the thing you have to wonder is, for a creative player on a team like Tunisia in this group that are missing other creative players, if that burden is going to fall on him, how many opportunities is he even going to get per game to leave an imprint? So is he of a certain level of quality where when they're playing England and England are up 1-0 and Tunisia do have to try and go for, if he only gets one chance, is he good enough to make some kind of brilliant play to get that second goal?
Yeah.
Or that first goal? I don't know, man.
And Naeem Slaty had a brilliant chance for Tunisia, actually early in the game, that could have put them 1-0 up. He didn't take it. And you'd wonder where the goals are going to come from. Elias Shaqiri, for me, looks like he could be a crucial player. Sits deep in midfield. He's playing with Montpellier in France, which is a decent level. Going to expect a lot of work for him, because you're basically, if you're a midfielder for Tunisia, you're going to become like a kind of a an auxiliary centre-back or fullback trying to cover the gaps and fill spaces when you don't have the ball. He could be crucial for them.
Yeah. Do you have more on Tunisia?
I don't really. Yeah. Not really. I. Someone said that they're ranked, or that they're expected within the group to be better than Panama. I don't feel that way.
Toss up.
Yeah.
While we're on that, you want to go for your prediction?
Oh, yeah. I think... I think Belgium are going to top the group. I think it's going to be England clear second. And
yeah,
after that, I don't know.
Yeah, couldn't put England number one. Too many Spurs players on this side. I'm worried. Worried that I can't win.
No, I just think I'm going with law of averages. And I think if one of the teams is going to upset England somewhat, and I don't mean win, I mean draw. I'm going to, you know, if it's one of the big two that's going to get upset, I'm going to say it's England.
Blast from the past time. We've got the wheel here. I've subbed out the teams from Group F, as we are now in Group G. And now we give it an old spin.
Somebody protested.
Oh! It's England.
It is England.
Yeah.
But it's also England and Belgium. It's,
well, okay.
It's David Platt's winner in extra time to put them into the quarterfinal in 1990.
And chipped in. And volleyed in! And it's there by David Platt! England have done it in the last minute of extra time! England are through to the quarterfinals of the World Cup. And Bobby Robson, ecstatic.
John Motson on the call.
Yeah, someone protested with the whole wheel of... with the blast from the past wheel. He wanted the wheel of football. Why don't you do that drop? It's amazing how people attach themselves to drops.
Well, because this isn't called wheel of football.
No.
This is called blast. JJ's blast from the past.
He wanted the wheel of football drop.
Well, I'm sorry. He'll just have to wait.
I feel like our listeners are creatures of habit.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
fear change.
You know what? We can relate. Certainly.
We fear change.
Yes, we all do. So here you go. That is Group G. I'm very excited about this group. I think...
We have two questions in a mailbag. Maybe we want to have a look at those.
Okay, of course.
Alex M. Jones, question for the Group G pod. As a Chelsea fan, I want to know how Gary Cahill is still a starter for England and is there no better option available? I think, if you'd allow me to feel this, I think Southgate has picked on form, and Cahill's end of season with Chelsea, he was back in the team basically, and I think that's why he went with him.
That could be the whole defensive that group: Cahill, John Stones, Phil Jones, even to a certain extent. There's been a lot of people kind of raising an eyebrow, like that guy just did with Gary Cahill, at the whole defensive unit for England, and that has not missed the mark on John Stones. He has heard that. Did you see what he said? Look at this quote from John Stones. He says here, the amount of top teams that we've stopped from scoring speaks for itself. Maybe people need to do a bit more research and stop judging us too much. Ooh. The teams that win these things have the best clean sheets record and concede the fewest goals, and that's a target for us. So he believes that they're one of the best defensive units in the entire tournament.
Hmm.
He sounds a little, pardon the pun, a little defensive of this group.
Well, let's be honest. He, over the last two seasons at City, himself and Otamendi have been lightning rods for criticism.
Even though they were pretty good this season.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter.
Stones, he talked about how the same things that Kyle Walker said, Stones said the same thing, that he can't even believe how much he's learned in the last year from Pep Guardiola.
I do feel like he's kind of been sensitive, because remember all those mistakes he made in the early part of his career at Man City? And I think he's kind of...
I'm a different player now. And this group is not as bad as what people are saying. I think that's his message. And look, he may be right. We'll find out.
Tony Morrissey, finally. Is Roberto Martinez really capable of putting this Belgium side into a position to reach its potential?
I'll defer to you.
It's another Roberto Martinez worry guy. I don't know. I've voiced my worries about Martinez. We've never seen him in a tournament. I feel like he's out of his comfort zone now, but he's got the players to do it, and he feels the best way forward is to just put them all together. So I don't know.
Well, I mean, who are you leaving out?
He could go full Mourinho and find a way to bring in Mauro and Fellaini. You know?
A guy that he would be familiar with too, Roberto Martinez.
Yeah, and I think he came on in their friendly the other day, so look. It's completely different to club football. He's negotiated them well so far. I think the jury is out. We have to see. I will say this, though. His reputation will take in a further knock if he can't really do something with this team. Because, like I said, they have all the tools to be able to create something special for this Belgian side.
Yep. One other note before we get out. I want to give some props to at Just a B Show on Twitter, because he thanked me for the song that we played for Brazil that I loved and you hated. He said, Attitude 67 has been playing in my car since you played it. You got it, my friend. I may download it too. Listen to it on the way home.
Attitude 67.
Yeah.
And he called me an old man for not liking it. He said I kind of had an old man vibe about me when I didn't like it. Yeah. You know, I'm fairly eclectic in what I listen to. It didn't do anything for me.
No, you want to hear it one more time?
Yeah, sure.
Still love it. I don't know. I'm a fan. That's probably been my favorite one so far.
Is it really?
Yeah.
It might be a grower. Maybe I have to actually... Attitude 67 might be the block party of my record collection. You have to listen to the end and then play it again and play it again.
There you go.
Yeah.
So that's Group G, everybody. Hope you enjoyed it. We've got one group preview left. So keep your eyes open for Group H. We have an interview with Bruce Arena coming to you later on Thursday of this week. Of course, part two of our USA series will be out shortly, if not already, depending on when you're listening to this podcast.
And what order in which you're listening.
Yes. So, man, just a lot. And this is before the tournament has even started, in which case...
I'm exhausted.
Yeah, we will be here even more. So there you go. That's it for the Group G preview. To you, I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
See you later, man.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.